LinkedIn News.
From the news team at LinkedIn, I'm Jesse Hempel, and this is Hello Monday. It's been exactly a decade since Satya Nadella became the CEO of Microsoft. I really remember it because that is when I met him, 2014. I wrote the first big story about Satya for Wired magazine. Microsoft was this stodgy, stagnant company in need of a turnaround, and most people didn't have a ton of faith in it. Everyone wondered, I wondered, could Satya Nadella do it? So fast forward a decade and look at Microsoft now. The stock is up more than 1,000%. It's one of the biggest transformation stories in business history. And yes, I now work for Microsoft because Microsoft owns LinkedIn. So when I launched Hello Monday, I invited Satya into the studio to ask him firsthand how he had done it. How did he light a fire under his employees? He had one immediate answer. Growth mindset.
The concept is pretty straightforward. If you take two kids in school, one of them has more innate capability but is a know-it-all. The other person has less innate capability but is a learn-it-all. You know how the story ends. The learn-it-all does better than the know-it-all.
This idea of growth mindset, learn-it-all, as Satya calls it, it's one of the most important concepts in business culture today. It comes up in so many of our episodes that it's sort of become its own shorthand. That's so not growth mindset of you, I might say. But we tend to simplify it. We rarely think about how to engender it. I mean, we all have things we feel we can't get better at, ideas we're attached to. So how can we change our own minds? That's what we'll get into after this.
The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by TIAA. TIAA makes you a retirement promise, a promise of a guaranteed retirement paycheck for life. Learn more at TIAA.org/promisespayoff.
Today's guest is Dr. Mary Murphy. Dr. Murphy studied under Stanford's Carol Dweck, the pioneer of growth mindsets. Dr. Murphy insists that our mindset is less like a switch and more like a spectrum. Her new book is Cultures of Growth, How the New Science of Mindset Can Transform Individuals, Teams, and Organizations. It's backed by more than 10 years of research into orgs like Patagonia and this one, Microsoft, companies that were built on cultures of growth. Dr. Murphy found that these teams succeeded by getting people to work together and to think a little bigger. Now, on the other hand, Dr. Murphy describes cultures of genius. These are the opposite of growth mindset style companies. Instead of seeing everyone as capable, they set up a couple of so-called geniuses, these big thinkers from whom all ideas must flow. This mindset keeps knowledge specialized and rarefied, and it can leave team members feeling stuck, stagnant. But these mindsets, they're not new to us. Dr. Murphy explains how we're taught these cultures. Cultures of growth or genius from a very early age. Here's Mary Murphy.
We have at least a couple of misunderstandings and misconceptions about mindset. I think one of the major misconceptions we have is that mindset is just in our mind. And then the implication is if you find yourself in the fixed mindset, change your mind. And what we have seen is that generations of teachers are being taught mindset in their teacher training courses. And then they say, I use growth mindset in the way that I teach. But when you talk to kids, you know, they are fed up with this idea of growth mindset because it has been really communicated to them as something that they just need to be all the time, right? Just be in your growth mindset. The second way that we misunderstand it is that it's just all about effort. And so these kids are being told, try harder. Try more, right. Do more, do it again. And this is growth mindset, right? And so, you know, I have been in rooms, Carol has been in rooms where we've both been approached by kids who say, I hate the growth mindset. And it's part of that idea that we haven't really understood that mindset exists on a continuum. There's the mindset continuum inside each of us, and that we all have the fixed and the growth mindset. I'm in my fixed mindset at least 25% of my day, right? Especially in the evening when there's a right way to load the dishwasher with my husband at home.
I've been talking to my wife.
And so understanding that we all have both within us, and we move between our mindsets based on situations that are predictable and common, our interactions with each other. And that's why the mindset culture around us, mindset not just in our head, but in our context, in our interactions with the people we care for most, whether that be our family members, whether that be our coworkers or people at work.
I think that when you think about it that way, it feels to me that one of the most challenging aspects of figuring out how to be in growth mindset is to identify personally all the times during a day when you flip to fixed without even realizing it. Right?
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Understanding those mindset triggers. These are four different situations that we come to after analyzing all the literature for the last 30 years and looking at the common and predictable situations that really move us between our fixed and our growth mindset. There's likely many more, but these are the four where the strongest evidence exists. And in our work with people right. at work, adults, and children, we sort of see almost everyone can identify with at least one or two. And if you're like me, it's all four.
Let's break this down for our listeners. Start with the first.
Okay. Evaluative situations. Evaluative situations are when I'm about to do something that I know I will be evaluated in the future based on my outcome. And so that could be I'm writing a presentation that I know many people are going to view. I'm writing a report that many people are going to read. I'm introducing a new idea, or I'm pitching a client for the first time.
Yeah.
For many people, these evaluative situations trigger them into the fixed mindset, where all they want to do is be sure that whatever they say, whatever they write, they are seen as smart. They are seen as having it. Through the lens of the fixed mindset, you either have it or you don't. And so it becomes very important in these evaluative situations to be able to pull information that's going to make me look smart. Maybe I don't leave a lot of room at the end for Q&A because I don't really want people in this presentation to question my ideas, right? And so through the lens of the fixed mindset, we pull information differently, we present our work differently, and it really narrows us in terms of our goals, which are really performance goals, right. When we create these products that we are creating.
Okay, so here's the thing. I totally see what you're saying, and I'm trying to think about then how I might do it differently in the moment. But I'm pretty wed to what people think of me when I'm presenting. Let's just take that one example.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine right now being more flexible in my approach.
Mm. I think that one of the things we can ask ourselves is, how can I create this so that I can learn the most?
Mm.
It doesn't necessarily mean that you don't have to stop thinking about the way other people are thinking about you,
right.
But instead add this lens around when I'm making this presentation, how can I learn the most based on what I am writing? Or how can I learn the most when it comes to pitching this client, right? It's a two-way street. I might leave more time for people to ask me questions. I might present in the work some of the challenges we experienced and the ways we overcame it so that later on, when we have time to discuss the work,
right.
You know, we can sort of brainstorm additional challenges we might see down the road, which makes the outcome better, right, over time.
Right.
So if we can move into that learning lens, rather than just thinking about having a spotlight on us, which is the fixed-minded, do I have it or do I not,
right.
It takes the pressure off a little bit.
So we've been through that first mindset trigger.
Yes.
You mentioned the success of others as
yes.
actually the fourth mindset trigger on here, but we can go out
That's
of order.
That's right. Okay. We can be flexible here. So the success of others is one of those triggers. It's a big one in academia. It's the frenemy trigger, where we are watching other people's careers. We kind of know when this person got promoted to VP. Maybe we thought we were going to be eligible for a big award this year, but it turns out it went to someone else. For many people, those moments when other people are praised on our team for something that we thought maybe we should be, getting a pat on the shoulder for,
right.
You know, those often move us into our fixed mindset where we start to think about it as zero sum. If she's so good at it,
right.
Maybe it means that I'm never going to be that good at
right.
it. Maybe it means that there's less room at the table for me.
It's a scarcity model, right?
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. But for other people, the success of others is really their growth-minded trigger. They see the success of others mm-hmm. and they're inspired by the success of others. And it's one way to move from your fixed to your growth is to be able to take a step back and think about, is there any way that I can learn? Can I talk to them later and say, what are the strategies you used? How did you prepare for that? Right?
Right.
And it's not that we're going to copy their specific strategies, but we might figure out some new things that we might be able to apply in ways that are authentic for us to help us grow and develop and learn in that context while being inspired by the success of these other people around us.
I really appreciated this one. It made me think a lot about an early mentor I had, a woman named Diane Brady, who probably listens to this show. I hope you do, Diane, who told me very early on, she said, whenever anybody around you does anything great, you be the first person to tell them how great it is. You just, you show up and you celebrate their ideas. And whenever you have an idea, you just give it away. She just preached this idea of generosity with the understanding that the more generous you are, actually, the more generative you become.
Yes.
And opportunities expand.
Yes.
And I've always felt that because she laid it out there and because it's directionally moved me, but I've never really had a way to describe it.
Mm.
And it feels very connected to this idea of success of others.
Mm-hmm. It's your growth mindset trigger.
There you go. Well, while we're talking about growth mindset triggers, let's talk about critical feedback.
Yeah. So critical feedback is a different situation than evaluative situations. Now, instead of anticipating the evaluation and preparing the material, mm-hmm. the feedback has come and the response is not so good. What happens then? For a lot of us, this is a very, very common fixed mindset trigger, right? We start to see the feedback as indicative of us. Does this mean that I'm a bad person? Does this mean I'm not competent, not mm-hmm. able, not talented, right? And what we know is that when people are triggered toward their fixed mindset, literally their brain chemistry changes, right? Their vision becomes cloudy. They literally start to not be able to hear things in the same way. And so, you know, from the perspective of a manager or supervisor, people get frustrated when, you know, you're giving critical feedback and it seems like the person didn't even hear it. And the truth is that if this is their fixed mindset trigger, they might not have.
Yeah.
They might not even remember later. There's been studies on memory, and they might not even remember later at all the details of that critical feedback, which is why it's so important when we interact with others. If you have a kid, if you have a direct report, who you are giving critical feedback to, if you know this is their fixed mindset trigger, being able to deliver this feedback in a way that won't immediately trigger them to that fixed mindset and turn that on and move them even just a little bit down that mindset continuum toward growth, it's going to be better for them in terms of the receiver of that feedback. Mm-hmm. It's also going to be better for you, the giver of the feedback, because you won't have to continue to give that same feedback over and over because they'll be able to receive it in a way that they can actually use it.
I think the thing that's tough there is figuring out both as the provider of the feedback, but also as a recipient of feedback and as someone who wants to receive feedback, how to separate the feedback from the sense of self. And growth mindset would posit that like whatever feedback I get is useful to me because I already believe that I am a person who is capable of being better in the future than I am right now, and the feedback will get me there.
That's right. Absolutely right.
Yeah. So I get that in theory.
But in the devil's in the details.
In those vulnerable moments when I get, let's say, the performance review from a boss who says, you know, you're really dropping the ball in this one area. Mm-hmm. I don't feel that way, even as someone who aspires to a growth mindset. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you have any suggestions for tools there?
Yeah. One set of tools that I think is really useful is to actually be able to process feedback, not alone, but with someone else. Mm-hmm. Someone, we call it the growth mindset culture pod. And it's kind of built off many of these ideas of the pods we created in the pandemic, right? People who you trust, people who sometimes it's within the same organization, but sometimes it's people outside the organization who can have a different perspective on things, can really help you process the feedback and separate out, you know, the stuff that's challenging and that's personal from the stuff that's actionable and useful. There's many examples of this, but Bar3's CEO went through a really big challenge with feedback, but she was really challenged. You know, they did a full organizational survey, and the feedback on her leadership in particular was extremely negative. And she immediately went into her fixed mindset, right? And she thought, that's it. I'm throwing in the towel. No more of this role for me. I'm just going to walk away.
Which I totally get. Yeah. I was like, yeah, absolutely.
That happens. It happens. Absolutely. It's the human response, I think, many times. And she had this group of friends from outside the organization who were able to sit with her after a little cheesecake, a little wine, and, you know, work through that feedback, take a look at the data, get a sense of what that feedback actually looked like. What were the things that people were unhappy about and which things were changeable and which things were not? And she transformed herself. And she transformed the organization. And they were one of the most resilient organizations during the pandemic when everything had to go online.
We'll be back with more from Dr. Mary Murphy.
The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by TIAA. In the last 100 years, we've seen financial markets swing, new currencies come and go, decades of savings lost in days. All showing that a retirement plan without a guarantee, quite simply, isn't enough. So more than a retirement plan, TIAA makes you a retirement promise. A promise of a guaranteed retirement paycheck for life. A promise that pays off. Learn more at TIAA.org/promisespayoff.
Hi, I'm Tomer Korn, LinkedIn's Chief Product Officer. On my podcast, Building One, we dive deep into what it takes to build great products. Recently, we had Zach Perret, the CEO of Plaid, and he shared about his struggles building a financial app for consumers and how he was able to turn it all around with a critical pivot. Take a listen.
I personally couldn't resonate as much with the consumer set that we were trying to reach. I just didn't have that level of empathy. When we made the shift to building a B2B product, though, I was building the product that I wanted. My co-founder and I were creating the product that we wanted ourselves, and we had so much empathy for what that product was.
Such a great insight.
You know, in that sense, we got lucky because we were creating a thing for ourselves. And then the people that we were talking to also had the same problems we did. They were fintech developers. We'd been a fintech developer. We'd been trying to build a fintech product for a year. And so we had such deep empathy. We had such a clear ability to...
If you want to hear more of Zach Perret's story and the lessons that follow, listen and subscribe to my podcast, Building One.
And we're back. Before the break, we heard how getting feedback from outside your organization, it can give you a new and helpful perspective on how you work. It can be a real game changer. But what does it take to give great feedback? Once again, here's Dr. Murphy.
Speak up, raise your voice.
Yeah.
I need to hear your voice more often. That's what a lot of women often hear.
That is feedback that is not helpful. Mm-hmm. What is feedback that is helpful?
Mm-hmm. Well, let me give you a concrete example. And I'm going to give you a concrete example, not in critical feedback, but actually in positive feedback, because we always, and the same kind of principles apply in both. So when we are praising someone, what do you generally say, Jesse?
Love that.
Love that.
That's great.
Yep. Good work. Mm-hmm. Love it. Mm-hmm. Excellent job, right? This is common.
Right.
But does it tell you anything about what the person did right? Does it tell us anything about what they could build on for more success in the future?
Right.
And so I think what it does is it really makes us feel good. And so we want to say, you know, we want to be sure that that feedback, whether positive or negative, is specific. It's actionable, and that those actions are things that are doable and within that person's sphere of influence.
Right.
That, and if it's not in that sphere of influence, if it's a dependency with someone else, that we actually give that feedback more broadly to the whole organization or to the whole team that really needs to hear it, especially if it's a group effort. The other thing we want to be sure about is that when we're providing that critical feedback or the praise feedback,
right,
that we are showing people how we think they could improve and to have that conversation together. It's not that I have all of the strategies or the solutions for improving it, but I want to work with you to think through what are some of those actionable strategies we might take and how or what the first steps we might be able to do and how can I support you in doing it. A true culture of growth is going to be one that provides resources, strategies, and supports for people to improve and grow. And they're going to give a lot of critical feedback. A lot of people think these cultures of growth that have growth mindset at the heart are just rainbows and sunshine and endlessly affirming.
No.
And it's absolutely the opposite. These are rigorous environments that are consistently giving critical feedback because they believe in people's abilities to grow and improve, and they're going to give people the resources and supports to do it.
I mean, I just think about how awesome critical feedback feels to receive when it's given in the context of, hey, Mary, I absolutely believe in you. This is incredible work, and you can make it so much better by adding this, and here's where you can go to learn how to do that. Okay, so the other side of that is receiving critical feedback.
Yes.
And I wanted to share one thing that I feel like now, in the middle of my career, in midlife,
yeah,
I am finally coming into my own realization about. And it is that feedback is just that. It is feedback. And I will receive a lot of it. And it is up to me to cull through it and determine what is valuable and what is not.
Mm-hmm.
None of it is an arbiter of truth.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, you'll receive a lot of feedback if you've built a culture of growth around you where people feel safe and comfortable giving you feedback.
Right.
Interestingly, in a culture of genius, these fixed-minded cultures that sort of you either have it or you don't, people are afraid to give feedback because any sort of piece of negative criticism or feedback is going to be taken as a sign that you don't have it,
right?
That you're not smart, that you're not talented, that you're not capable. And so, you know, we hope to be environments where we are going to receive a lot of critical feedback. And as you say, being able to sift through it and really find the gems that are actionable and that are really going to improve what you're doing, I think that's where the magic is.
Well, we have one more mindset trigger to review together, and that is high effort situations.
Yes, high effort situations. These are situations where oftentimes I'm doing something for the first time. I might be given a stretch assignment, or I might need to master a whole new domain in my work, something I've never had to learn before. And I have to do it quickly because there's a client, right, that's going
right.
to show up in 3 days. And I need to know everything there is to know about vacuums.
Right.
In marketing, you probably, in media, you understand this.
Yes.
And so for a lot of people, the reason why high effort situations is a fixed mindset trigger is because of this correlation, this belief that we have. This negative correlation exists between effort and ability. If I have to try hard, it yeah. means that I'm not naturally capable. I'm not a natural. I'm not just, it doesn't come easy, right? Maybe then it's not my thing. And so you see a lot of this in kids. You see a lot of this in adults who just don't really want to have to put in that effort because they're taking that effort and they're seeing it for themselves and they're thinking, wow, if I have to work this hard, this isn't my strength.
It's like you've been talking to my 5-year-old.
Yes, yes. And this is like one of my beefs with the Strengths Finders work, right? Is that it really puts you into this mindset that, you know, what we need to do in order to be our best selves is to just find our strengths and double down there.
Yeah.
It's a really, when you think about it, kind of a fixed-minded approach, right? Rather than thinking about the places we can develop and grow and kind of challenge ourselves. Instead, let's just find those narrow places of our strengths and let's like find the work that only fits that.
Right. So there's one other piece that I really want to talk to you about, and it's this idea of culture and how we can exist within cultures that foster a growth mindset. And in fact, that is one way that we ourselves foster a growth mindset in ourselves as we place ourselves in learning cultures.
Yes.
How do we begin to even understand if the environment that we've landed in is a growth mindset environment?
Yeah. Well, we can look at a lot of cues in our environments. We can look at how decisions are made, for example. In a fixed-minded culture of genius, right, there is often a genius at the helm, and the best ideas come from that particular mind or set of minds of the crown geniuses. And everybody's job is to sort of identify what those decisions are and then execute, right, on those decisions. We see that this is risky for many reasons.
Right.
You can think of, you know, the culture of genius organizations, Theranos, WeWork, Uber, right?
I was going to say all of those companies are companies that as a business journalist, I wrote a lot about.
Yes.
And you give a great example of something that happened at Uber that illustrated a sort of genius mindset culture, right? When Susan Fowler raised her complaint about sexual harassment, and the company's response implicitly was like, well, that person's too important to even go into this.
He's a genius.
Right? He's a genius. Mm-hmm. And by the way, those geniuses always kind of look the same.
Well, that's the other problem of a culture of genius.
Yeah, very much so. I'm interested in both how you identify those cultures, but then how those cultures themselves can sort of shift and change.
Yes, absolutely. So we'll go back to how do we identify them? So decision-making is one of those places where you see really big differences between a culture of genius and a culture of growth. In a culture of growth, good ideas come from everywhere. And there are structures in place to get great ideas and important information from frontline workers and lift it all the way up into management and higher level executives who can actually change the organization for good. And we've seen this in many of the companies I've worked with where safety was the number one priority. And it was the frontline workers, when they changed the culture, started to talk about this growth mindset culture and trying to be vigilant for ways to improve, particularly around safety. And it really changed the course of these organizations over time. I think that another way to tell about fixed and growth mindset culture is really the extent to which the teams and organization are built teams or bought teams. In a culture of genius, we have bought teams. We are looking externally, who are the most talented people we can bring in and put in these high level positions, because we think that genius is fixed and we have to go find it and promote it. In organizations that are true cultures of growth, you see much more of that built team environment, that we are going to invest and develop our own people, and we're going to promote them within for the journey that they've taken, for that growth and development. And we find over time that this is the way to success for most organizations, that for the long term, you can be much more successful in these cultures of growth than in these fixed-minded cultures of genius.
One other thing I wanted to talk about. So much of your book is an invitation for people to think about where they value and spot genius and opportunity.
Yes.
And to look beyond the sort of pro forma white male genius.
That's right.
And see the potential for genius everywhere, right?
That's right.
We're living in a moment where DEI initiatives have fallen out of fashion, where there is a chilling effect in the climate as a result of the Supreme Court's decisions last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect that this moment will continue. And against that backdrop, how do you see the opportunity for this kind of work to bring more equity into our organizations?
Mm. I love this question. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about it. So we find in our research, now more than 20 years of research on fixed and growth mindset cultures, that these cultures of growth are just more naturally diverse. Why is that? Well, if you Google genius and you go to Google Images, who are we going to see, Jesse?
Albert Einstein.
Albert Einstein, all over the pages. You might see Steve Jobs, you might see Elon Musk, you might see
Bill Gates.
Exactly. Who do you not see, right? Women, people of color, LGBTQIA people. We don't see people with disabilities, right? And so what happens is in these cultures of genius that are looking to recruit and retain and promote genius, they're looking through the lens of that really narrow cultural prototype.
Mm.
And it means that these organizations often miss hidden talent in terms of their recruitment. But when it comes to also if they have diversity within their ranks, they're more likely to overlook their achievement because they don't fit in that narrow prototype of what a genius looks like. And in fact, people who've come up against hardships, people who have actually been left to the side and thought of as, you know, not necessarily talented their whole lives, that aren't always given the benefit of the doubt, these are individuals who by necessity have had to persist through these kinds of challenges. And so when we look in the culture of growth at things like the journey traveled, the distance traveled, as one of the characteristics that matters, because we know the distance traveled is likely to predict the distance people are going to go in the future. So these cultures of growth are places where diversity, equity, and inclusion thrives. And equity in particular, because equity pays attention to difference. Yeah. Equity is going to really take a look at, you know, where what people's needs are in the moment. And then a culture of growth is going to provide for those needs, give strategies, tools, resources, mentors, sponsors, and support so that people who have different kinds of needs based on their background and based on their history, that they can be successful in these places. And you see in our analysis of the Fortune 1000, we found that strong cultures of growth had more diverse boards and they had more women on their board, but their boards were not larger. So they were not doing that tack on diversity that you oftentimes see when it's suddenly, oh my gosh, we realize we're a bunch of white guys and we need some diversity here, right? And so you see that very differently in the culture of genius and the culture of growth. It's one of the places where I think cultures of growth really have the edge.
That was Dr. Mary Murphy, author of Cultures of Growth. Now, this episode really got me thinking about a lot of things. Like, there's some pretty pragmatic advice embedded in here. Like, first, who is your growth mindset culture pod? Mary describes this as people outside of wherever you work, who you can trust to give you unbiased feedback on your own performance. This makes me think of the people in my own life who can tell me the things about myself that my colleagues either just don't know or won't say. Second, give pointed, unambiguous feedback. This is an important one. Too often, our biases and our hunches get in the way of being able to be helpful. If we want the recipient to learn from our notes, it's crucial to be very specific. This goes for positive feedback too. Give credit specifically where it's due. Last, spot the difference between a culture of growth and a culture of genius. Where in your own workplace do you feel that people are empowered to learn? Where do you notice people shift into a more fixed mindset? Noticing these shifts can help us identify where we need to come up with better strategies. Now, we'll be talking about all of this at Office Hours this week. I really hope you'll come. As usual, our producer Sarah Storm and I will go live on Wednesday afternoon at 3 p.m. Eastern from the LinkedIn news page. Now, if you have trouble finding us, you can always email us at hellomonday@linkedin.com and we'll send you a link. It even allows you to create a calendar invite so you don't miss us. Hope to see you. Hello Monday is a production of LinkedIn News. Sarah Storm produced this episode with help from Lolia Briggs. It's sound designed and engineered by Asaf Gadron. Our theme music was composed just for us by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Our contributor, Michaela Greer, helps build our culture of growth. Enrique Montalvo is our executive producer. Dave Pond is head of news production. Courtney Coop is head of original programming. Dan Roth is the editor-in-chief of LinkedIn. I'm Jesse Hempel. We'll be back next Monday. Thanks for listening.
Oh my goodness, what is today's date? March 11th.
And she strikes out before we begin.